From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Oh, it's about that time once again. Yes, good afternoon, ladies and gents. Hope you all had one fantastic weekend. Current Sports is back in your ear with another fun-filled week. I'm your host, Al Martin, on this November 18th, 2013. Today, we're going to open the discussion on all of the weekend sporting action that took place, which, yes, includes the Lions' loss to the Steelers yesterday. Why in the world did Schwartz try the fake field goal attempt? That's the big question this morning. We'll discuss that. Well, all morning, I should say. It's the afternoon now. But we'll discuss that. We'll also talk about the Michigan State football team, who just keeps on racking up the wins one game at a time. A 41-28 win over the Nebraska Cornhuskers this past Saturday. You'll get to hear what head coach Mark D'Antonio and the players had to say after that one. And I mean, folks, man, so much happened this weekend. Unbelievable action that happened this weekend. You even had an MSU men's basketball nail-biter at the Breslin Center on Friday night. The MSU women, they went to overtime yesterday. Michigan loses to Iowa State on the hardwood and get a win over the Northwestern Wildcats on Saturday on the turf. We're going to try and get to all of it. Keyword is try, okay? We're going to try. If you want to call in and comment on any of the weekend sporting action, though, pick up that phone, dial 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. Those who do will be automatically entered in a drawing to win two football tickets to the last Michigan State home game of the season against Minnesota on November 30th. Also remind you all that if you want to be a part of the Current Sports TV audience this week, you can do so by signing up online at WKAR.org. Now, last week we told you that East Lansing head basketball coach, boys basketball coach, Steve Fenimore was going to be our guest, but we had some scheduling conflicts, so we had to reschedule Steve for a later date. So you can be in the TV studio audience this week when my guest on Current Sports will be former NFL and MSU running back Todd T.J. Duckett. Yes, Duckett played at MSU from 1999 to 2001 and played in the NFL for Seattle, Detroit, Washington, and Atlanta. Now, today, Duckett heads up New World Flood, which is a service organization that works to help youth become change agents in their communities. Recording takes place 6:30 p.m. Wednesday at WKAR-TV Studios on the MSU campus. Seats are totally free. Yes, free of charge, but reservations are strongly recommended because seating is limited. Again, that's Current Sports with Al Martin and guest Todd T.J. Duckett. To reserve your free seats to be in the TV audience, just visit WKAR.org. You'll see a link there. Just click the link, fill out your name, I believe your email. That's it. You're signed up. All you got to do is show up on Wednesday night. Sounds pretty simple, right? Just go to WKAR.org and you'll see it there. Well, let's hop to the show. Here are your Current Sports headliners on this November 18, 2013. Well, Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger, he passed for 367 yards, and four touchdowns, including two in the final 5 minutes as the Steelers rallied to beat the Detroit Lions 37-27. The Lions passed up a gimme 28-yard field goal. 28 yards, folks. 2 minutes, just 2 minutes into the fourth quarter when Jim Schwartz dialed up a fake for the first time in his 4.5 seasons as a Lions coach. Now, Sam Martin was stopped for a 3-yard gain on 4th and 5. The Steelers recovered a fumble at the end of the play, and on the ensuing possession, they drove 97 yards in 16 plays for the go-ahead momentum-shifting touchdown that eventually proved to be the key moment in that game, beating the Lions 37-27. And Schwartz, in a defiant post-game news conference, said he was trying to put the game away with an aggressive play call. Before I read a quote from that, I'll play you this snippet right here.
We didn't make enough plays to win this one, including that one. But we worked it. It was there, we thought. They made the play. We didn't. Well, I'm not going to get into the scheme. We thought that we could get it in with the play that we ran. And we thought we had a great chance to be able to score a touchdown there and not just get a field goal. So, yeah, I mean, we wouldn't have called it if we didn't think it was there. It was my call.
Why risk it when you could have gone up 7?
Because we're trying to win the game. You could have said the same thing about the Redskins game, okay? Why risk it? Why risk it? Hey, look, every play is a risk. We're going to try to do our very best to win the game. We didn't make that one. We still had a chance. Our defense turned around and gave up 97 yards after that.
Yeah, that's head Lions coach Jim Schwartz. And he went on to say, what you didn't hear was, he went on to say this, quote, "It had nothing to do with mindset. It had to do with trying to make the plays to win the game. We didn't make it, but look, you can say whatever you want. Y'all can say whatever you want about me. Don't say I'm scared, because we ain't, okay? This team's going to be aggressive. We're going to play our very best. We didn't play well enough to win this game, okay? But it's not because we're passive or anything." Interesting comments from Jim Schwartz, and I have some strong opinions about his comments. We're going to dive into that discussion later on in current sports. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on that momentum shifting, go ahead, you know, field goal fake, and just the Lions game in general, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I really don't get his comments. But anyway, the Lions scored all 27 of their points in an explosion of a second quarter, but allowed two touchdowns after the failed fake and squandered just several opportunities, folks, to put a stranglehold on that NFC playoff spot. Stafford completed just 3 of 16 passes in the second half and overthrew Bannon Pettigrew and Kevin Ogletree on would-be touchdowns. Reggie Bush, he did not play well, folks. He lost a first-half fumble and was benched late in the game on a day when he finished with just 31 yards rushing. Now, the Lions had to settle for a field goal at the end of the second quarter when Stafford threw 3 incompletions from the 1. Even the amazing Calvin Johnson dropped a 4th-and-3 pass that ended the game-opening drive. Stafford broke Bobby Lane's franchise passing record on his bomb to Calvin Johnson in the second quarter, but he finished just 19 for 46 for 362 yards, and on that same play to Megatron, it also marked his 100th career passing touchdown. So how about that for Matthew Stafford? But, you know, hey, still gets the L. All right, Michigan State all but locked up a spot in the Big Ten championship game, and the 16th-ranked Spartans didn't even need their nation-leading defense at its best to do it. Now, with Nebraska turning the ball over 5 times, and Connor Cook directing a game-breaking drive in the fourth quarter, the Spartans won 41-28 on Saturday to take a 2-game lead in the Legends Division with 2 games to play. Now, Jeremy Langford was great. He ran 32 times for 151 yards and scored 2 touchdowns. Keith Mumphrey caught a 27-yard touchdown from Connor Cook after the Cornhuskers pulled within 6 points. The Spartans are now 9-1 and 6-0 in conference, beat the Huskers for the first time in 8 all-time meetings. The first time in school history, folks. They can clinch the division with a win at Northwestern next week or a loss by Minnesota in either of its last 2 games. Michigan State plays Minnesota to end their regular season. Now, Big Ten leading rusher Amir Abdullah, he ran 22 times for 123 yards for Nebraska. He went over 100 yards for the 7th straight game and 8th time this season, and is the first player to do so against the Spartans. The Spartans gave up 182 yards on the ground, 392 total, both season high. Such a surprise there. They had come into the game allowing an average of just 43 yards on the ground and 210 total. Nebraska found a way, I tell you on that one. Now, Connor Cook was 15 for 31 for 193 yards. U of M and Northwestern, Brendan Gibbons, he tied the game with a 44-yard field goal at the end of regulation. It was desperation mode if you saw that play, folks. Devin Gardner, he scored on a 5-yard run to lift Michigan to a 27-19 triple overtime win over Northwestern on Saturday. Gardner scored on an option and ran it in on the 2-point conversion to make it an 8-point game. Northwestern had one more chance, but Trevor Simon, he got sacked for a 14-yard loss by Jabril Black on the second down. Then his desperation pass on fourth down got intercepted by Thomas Gordon in the end zone, giving the Wolverines their 2nd win in 5 games and sending the Wildcats to their sixth straight loss. They are 0-6 in the Big Ten, folks. Now, Gardner completed 24 of 43 passes for 226 yards, and get this, no interception. That's surprising there. All right, MSU and Columbia scare. After Tuesday's big win over number one Kentucky, the Michigan State men's basketball team took a step back with a tight 62-53 win over Columbia. Trailing by four at the half, MSU was rescued by a monster effort from Adrian Payne, AP, who scored 26 points, 11 rebounds, a double-double for him. Columbia had a chance to tie it with as little as 1:47 left, but Keith Appling alley-oop to Adrian Payne pushed the lead to 57-53. Izzo lamented the lackluster effort from the perceived top team in the country. Now, while Payne dominated inside, he didn't have much help. Matt Costello, Gavin Schilling, they all combined for 17 scoreless minutes and just three rebounds. Columbia out-rebounded MSU 31-27, which Izzo took pretty personally. Here is Tom Izzo after that game, and also you'll hear from, I believe, Keith Appling and Denzel Valentine after that game.
Well, Izzo was a lot more aggressive than the players on the floor, so I thought they did a hell of a job tonight. It's one of those things where you it's funny, when that happened, I almost got up and thanked them, but I thought I didn't want to embarrass anybody. But I've always said that if we get that group back to where they win a couple games for us, tonight might have been one of them. So you got to give them credit. I thought you had to give Appling a little credit for getting us in things late in the game. And we executed pretty good when we really needed to, which shows you that you can if you want to. So we'll get better, guys. It was just disappointing for me because I hope we learned. I hope we were mature enough and grown up enough. But
seeing a different type of offense, different type of defense.
I feel like it's gonna help us a lot, because one of the Big Ten teams, Northwestern, run a similar offense, so it kind of prepares us for when we play them. But it also allows us to focus in on defense, because we feel like if we relax at any point of the game, we were going to get scored on, So, I feel like it's definitely going to help us in the long run for some teams that we're going to run into later on in the season and for us defensively.
From the start.
How much did the pace of play affect you guys today?
It affected us a little bit because, they slowed us down and, they ran their stuff, 30 seconds, 25 seconds. And, it made us sit down and, they were getting some back cuts and some easy layups. And, I think it slowed us down a little bit, but that's no excuse for how we play.
So, yeah, and news was just released about an hour or so ago that the Michigan State men's basketball team is now the number one team, officially the number one team in the nation in the AP poll for the first time since 2001. MSU got 51 first place votes, with number two Kentucky and number seven Louisville earning seven apiece. The Spartans are 3-0 and host Portland tonight, 7 p.m. on the Big Ten Network, in their first game as the number one team since a 59-58 upset loss at Indiana on January 7th. 2001, and Current Sports will be there tonight. Well, there you have it. That game is tonight at the Breslin Center. All right, University of Michigan basketball team, they didn't have a particularly good weekend either, dropping their first road contest of the year at Iowa State, 77-70. Now, despite the return of Mitch McGarry, the Wolverines couldn't withstand a late push from the Cyclones, who were led by Melvin Ejims, 22 points, 9 boards. Iowa State closed the game on a 23-10 run and held Michigan to 8 of 29 shooting from three-point land and 4 of 9 from the free throw line. McGarry, a preseason All-American selection, he had 9 points, 6 rebounds, and 22 minutes in his first game back after being out with a back injury. After scoring 8 in the first half, Ejim, he shut him down, just completely shut him down, allowing just 1 point in the second 20 minutes. Wow, that's unbelievable there. All right, MSU in Dayton. Thanks to Ariel Powers' game-tying layup with 9 seconds left in regulation, the Michigan State women's basketball team forced overtime and held on for a 96-89 victory over number 23 Dayton. Powers' layup even things out after the Spartans blew a 15-point second-half lead over the Flyers. The Spartans were led by Powers and fellow freshman Tori Jankowska, who each poured in 24 points. Senior Annalise Pickrell added 21, including 7 in the extra period. It was a key 6-0 run in overtime that gave the Spartans an 89-82 advantage, and they snuck by despite 25 points from Dayton's Andrea Hoover and 19 and 15 boards from Allie Malcott. So the MSU women now focus on Detroit, who visits the Breslin Center Wednesday night. All right, the fifth-seeded Indiana men's soccer team, they won its 12th Big Ten Tournament Championship in school history Sunday after defeating Michigan State 1-0 in Ohio. The Spartans were playing in 15-20 mile-per-hour winds due to a rainstorm, which we definitely felt the effects of, which postponed the start of a game several hours. The Hoosiers will look to defend their 2012 NCAA championship this year, but it is their first Big Ten tournament win. Since 2006, Michigan State's Fatai Alashi and Brent McIntosh, were named to the all-tournament team after the match. Jimmy Johnson has a 6th NASCAR championship victory in the Sprint Cup Series on Sunday. Johnson staked his claim as one of the sport's most dominant competitors by winning his 6th Sprint Cup in 8 years. He now needs one more championship to tie the NASCAR record held by Richard Petty and the late Dale Earnhardt at 38 years and 61 days old. Johnson is the youngest driver to win 6 NASCAR championships. Petty was 38 when he won the number 6, and Dale Earnhardt was 42 when he won his 6th in 1993. Michigan State's field hockey team, they had upset number 2-seeded Syracuse in the first round of the NCAA tournament on Saturday. The Spartans topped Syracuse on its home field, where it was 9-0 this season and had won 45 in a row. Now, Abby Barker and Kristen Matula, they tacked on the goals for MSU. They now face Connecticut at 2 p.m. today at Syracuse's home field for a spot in the Final Four. Well, those are your current sports headliners on this November 18th, 2013. If you want to call in and comment on any of those, you know, you can give us a call at the Current Sports Studio by dialing 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. Those who do will be automatically entered in our drawing to win 2 tickets. Yes, 2 tickets to MSU's last home game of the season against Minnesota. Give us a call. And of course, you know that you can comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. Again, that number to dial in and call is 517-355-9527 for your chance to win the win 2 tickets to MSU football's last home game of the season. Well, let's dive into the Lions and Steelers, because that's the talk of the town now, as the Lions fell to the Steelers 37-27 as the Steelers rallied to beat the Lions. Just a real heartbreaker for them. To a Pittsburgh Steelers team that many coming to this one felt the Lions should have handled easily. But the talk of that game had to do with, as you just heard in our current sports headliners, was that fake field goal early in the fourth quarter that would have put the Lions up by a touchdown and possibly, you know, would have shifted both. It would have made things, who knows what would have happened if they just kicked the field goal, they go up by a touchdown, the Steelers maybe would have tied it, who knows. But from a morale standpoint, that moment weighed heavy on the team. And we're asking you to call in and give your thoughts on it, 517-355-9527. I believe we have a caller on line one. How you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
How you doing today?
Very well. How are you?
Good. I want to talk about the Lions. Well, that's one of the worst secondaries in football, the Lions, man. That was a complete disaster yesterday. Open receivers were running all over the field for the Steelers. And the Steelers aren't a great team, obviously. They were 3-6 coming into the game. So between that and the Lions going away from Calvin Johnson the second half, very disappointing effort by the Lions. I mean, they had a chance to put another game up on them over the Packers, but they blew it, man. They should have definitely gained one.
Yeah, I totally agree. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thanks, man. Take care.
No problem. You too. I have to totally agree. The Lions secondary, guys, is just – I'm joined by Alex and Matt right now. Guys, that Lions secondary, let's be honest, it is one of the worst secondaries in the league. If you can make an argument that it is the worst. I mean, it's so easy, and it's so ironic because defensively for the Lions, they did very well at containing the run. Le'Veon Bell didn't have a lot of breakout plays. When he did, it was on flats. It was on flat routes, screens to the right or left, or Le'Veon cutting down the middle down the field. As far as running wise go, I mean, the Lions did a great job. That's a tribute to that great defensive line. I mean, Ndamukong Suh, Nick Fairley, those guys, they bring it just about every game. That secondary, though, I tell you, man, the Lions need to invest in some DBs. Please. They are so weak. I mean, anyone can pass on the Lions. And, you know, when the Lions actually had a stint throughout that game where the Steelers in the red zone three consecutive times throughout that game, the Lions were able to hold the Steelers to field goals. Just tack on three. And, you know, that fourth time, though, looking at those first three stints when the Lions did stop them, the Steelers tried to pound the ball on the ground and use Le'Veon to try to go up the middle. It wasn't happening. That Lions defensive line was great, held up very well. And the one time that the Steelers score on that fourth time when they get to the red zone, the one time they score, they do it on a pass play. How ironic is that? I mean, it's just the Lions pass defense is so bad, guys, and it definitely got exposed this past weekend. So, just a minute, guys. Before I want to get your guys' thoughts on. I believe we have Max on line one right now. Max, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well, very well.
Well, I just thought, in regards to the fake field goal attempt, you know, it's kind of a D'Antonio call without the D'Antonio execution. The man, it was his first time getting hit in the NFL. I mean, it was his first NFL play, essentially, for the placeholder.
Right.
I mean, it was a gutsy call, but maybe practice that a little more during practice time and get it going during the actual game. That and the fact that they didn't really play Reggie Bush after he fumbled the ball earlier in the game didn't exactly help us either.
So you don't agree with the fake field goal, Max?
No, I don't agree with it just because, you know, it didn't look like they practiced that enough for sure.
Gotcha. And, Max, you know, I just realized this is Max Rebner, our golf tip pro that we had throughout all summer. Hey, Max, how you doing, man? You all right?
I'm doing good. No more golf for me, unfortunately.
I know, right? The weather has definitely hit us hard, man. But, Max, thanks a lot for your call. Appreciate it, brother. We'll be in touch.
All right. Sounds good, Al.
But, let's talk about the fake field goal for a minute. I thought it was idiotic, stupid, just an airhead, bonehead move on Jim Schwartz's part. And it's one of those plays, if you make the fake field goal attempt, and you get the first down or you possibly score on it, you look like a genius. But if something happens like what happened yesterday, where you know, you get 3 yards, you don't get the first down, and you turn over. Martin fumbled on the play. You look like an idiot. And that's exactly what happens. I didn't think it was a great move at all. Even thought to myself during that play, what if they did fake it here? And they so did. I'm sitting there, if they did, that would be an idiotic play. Why would you even think about that? I don't know. Do you guys like it?
Let me just say this, okay? Expect the unexpected. He probably watched D'Antonio the night before. He probably watched the
Brown,
Sandler
huh?
thing.
The Charlie Brown.
He watched Charlie Brown just like during the holiday season. And he was like, you know what? I'm feeling gutsy today. Let's do it. They're not suspecting the old David Yakers to go run, you know? It's not like he's a young, nimble Robbie Gould or anything
like that.
Well,
this is that. Martin this time.
This is
Sam
David
Martin.
Akers. This is David Akers.
Sam Martin.
Well, it was Sam Martin in this play.
Sam Martin.
Is Sam a rookie?
Yes.
He's a rookie to make this play.
No, but that's great. But I would have liked to see David Akers do it because that would be unexpected. You're not gonna take the old David Akers down in the middle and have him run up the gun.
So do you agree with the call at all?
I agree with the call, but not in the time of the game.
You agree
I'm
with
not
the call.
Opposed to the call. I'm not opposed to the call. But during the time of the game, I agree with when they're up four, no go. But I'm all up for spontaneous.
I just didn't think that was the time to do it, you know?
No, I agree. The timing wasn't right, but I like the play call. I like the aggressiveness.
I didn't like it one bit, Matt.
All right, now if they score there, the game is over. If they score a touchdown on that play, the game is more than likely over. They have, an 11-point lead. Hopefully they can, you know, make enough plays, although, you know, God knows, looking at the second half, they couldn't do anything on offense anyway. But the difference between, you know, Charlie Brown and this disaster is...
Can't compare.
Charlie Brown's on 4th and 1.
Right.
This is 4th and 5. You are in the NFL, in the red zone. There's not a lot of space for the defense to be spread out anyway. And you're going to send your punter on a 12-yard run.
He's a rookie.
It's not going to work. It's never going to work.
No.
You'd have to catch them so off guard that, you know, guys aren't even looking at the line of scrimmage when the ball is snapped.
Right, right.
I mean, there's no way that a rookie punter is going to outrun an entire defense and gain 12 tough yards in the red zone. Because, you know, the snap of the ball, he's 7 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Then he has to go and still get 5 more yards. There's no way that's going to work.
Yeah.
I understand the thought process behind going for it to try and, you know, take momentum.
I still don't understand it.
Stick a fork in the game, put him away.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can't do it like that. If you're going to go for it, just line it up and go for it. Throw it to Calvin Johnson.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I wanted to say. If you're going to go for it in that moment of the game, 4th and 5, don't trust a rookie field goal kicker to go out. Rookie
right.
kicker
Give
to go out there.
Give it to the best receiver in the
exactly.
NFL.
Exactly. Put your offense out there, man up, and go for the thing. If you're going to go for it, don't field goal kick with a rookie kicker who doesn't have a lot of experience at all and expect him to run for 5 yards and get you a first yard, get a first down. I don't get that at all. I thought the entire play was idiotic, and it happened in, 2 minutes, I believe, into the fourth quarter. I think at that point, just take what you're given. As the game goes on, you start to see, you know, how the points match up. Then you can evaluate what you need to do if you want to go and take a risk here, because, you know, you start weighing the possessions out. I thought it was too early to go for it, and because you never know what was going to happen throughout the rest of that game. I thought in the first half, the Lions' offense was rolling. They looked very, very well. Matthew Stafford, he looked comfortable. Calvin Johnson was catching everything thrown his way. They were great. That second half, though, was just so – it's like I don't know what happened. They looked like two totally different teams when they were out there. But yeah, I mean, just the decision to go for it. If you just kick the field goal, you go up by a touchdown, and you put the pressure on Pittsburgh to go out there and try to match you and try to tie the game up. Going for it and not converting and fumbling at that, you know, now the Steelers are in position to, if they go down and score a touchdown now, they have the entire momentum of the game because they go up. They take the lead on you. And that's something that you just don't make that move that early in the fourth quarter. You know, I think you evaluate that more so as that fourth quarter goes, maybe with 6 minutes, 5 minutes, 3 minutes left in the game, not with just 2 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter, 2 minutes into the fourth quarter, excuse me. But yeah, overall though, but other than that moment, in that first half, I thought the Lions played great. Congratulations to Matthew Stafford, who, you know, he got that, the 100th, career TD for him. And also, the breaking the record, you know, for the, you know, the Lions record. But I just think that the Lions, it comes back to bite them every single game, it seems. But they've been fortunate to kind of combat it with their offense, but it's just that secondary. I mean, I feel as though any quarterback in this league can just pass so easily on this Lions team because that secondary is so weak to me.
And Ben Roethlisberger is the type of quarterback who can kind of neutralize the front four because he keeps plays alive. I mean, there was one where he's getting sacked by two Lions and flips it out to Heath Miller for a first down. I mean,
that's
he can make plays like that that kind of render a big pass rush moot, and that's when they can capitalize and goodness, no one could tackle Antonio Brown.
Yeah, Antonio Brown had a great game.
Really, and the Lions, for saying they played well in the first half, they played well in the second quarter. They fell behind 14-0.
Well, they
looked like they were going to get run off the field by the Steelers, which would have been embarrassing, and the loss was embarrassing anyway. But the offense is just so feast or famine. I mean, they score 27 points in the second quarter and none for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
How is that even possible?
That's what I say. I mean, it looked as though they just totally got they weren't focused out there, it just seems like. You know what I mean? I don't know if it – and you know what? To go back on Matthew Stafford, you know, even though he found Calvin – I mean, you throw him to the cheat code. I always call Calvin Johnson the cheat code. I mean, he can make catches anywhere on the field. He has great hands. He's a freak of nature. But to me, I thought that Matthew Stafford, he dodged some bullets throughout that game because he forced a lot of throws in that game, which I say week to week to week. There were some throws that I kind of just looked at and just shook my head, and it was just lucky that the Steelers defense had butterfingers because some of those could have been, you know, possibly a pick six and taken back to the house. And then the one that really stands out to me, I understand he's Calvin Johnson, but you know, that interception that he threw, you know, the heave to Calvin when he was cutting down, I believe, with the left side of the field or something like that, and there's just, you know, there's about three jerseys there. You know, if you're going to make that throw, give Calvin Johnson a chance to have a play on the ball. There was absolutely no chance for Calvin to make a play on that ball, and it ended up being an interception. But I just feel like Stafford kind of just – he takes too many risks as a quarterback out there, that if you're going against a better defense than that of a Steelers team, could have turned – it could have been really, really – it could have been worse.
I don't know. On the play that there was a pick, though, he was rolling right across his body.
Yeah, it's a terrible throw.
It was short. No, but he did have the upper – he did have a step on him. Johnson did have the step, even though there was double.
And honestly, how many times have we seen him complete that pass to Calvin? That's the thing. I don't think you can fault him for that. He just underthrew it. Yeah, I mean, he just made a bad throw.
That's what I'm saying. It's a bad throw in that moment.
It's not a bad decision. I've seen Stafford. Not when you have Calvin Johnson. It's just a bad throw.
No, you got to give him a better chance. That's what I'm saying. You got to give him a better chance at making that play.
But, I mean, I thought it was a
bad decision to throw the ball up. I thought it was a bad decision for him to just heave the ball up there like that. Especially in the moment in the game.
With any other receiver, that is a bad decision. But not with Calvin. How many times have we seen Calvin?
We've
do
seen
that?
Him. Yes, but give him a chance. That's what I'm saying. In that moment, you got
to
give him a better chance.
Give him a
not in that moment. You're down.
It's not like he planned on underthrowing him by 5
Matt,
yards.
You're down in that game. You're in desperation mode against the Steelers. You don't just throw the football up like, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? That's basically what that was. No, not at all.
how are we moving the ball otherwise in the second half?
Not at all. I thought it was a terrible decision of him to just throw the ball up. And he'd been doing it throughout the whole game, most of the game.
By that point, the wheels had fallen off.
In the beginning of that third quarter, if you remember, he tried to throw a slant route. I forget who the receiver was. That could have been picked off. He throws one where it's tipped in the air. The Steelers just plain drops it. I mean, there were so many – just too many risks taken from Matthew Stafford in that game. I'm sticking with that. But, yeah, I mean, overall, though, Lions defense did a good job of shutting down the Steelers' run. Secondary has to get better. And they got to stay more focused throughout the course of a game because they came out that game too lax, I thought, overall. So,
I mean, you throw for 300 yards in the first half and finish with 360? I mean, that's pathetic.
So. Yeah, it's terrible. It is terrible. So
Reggie Bush did absolutely nothing the entire game.
And that's the thing, you know, and they showed, you know, something that's, you know, been working in the Lions' favor throughout this entire season. If Reggie Bush has a bad game, Calvin Johnson goes crazy. If Calvin Johnson is having a bad game, Reggie Bush goes crazy. It was one of those days where, you know, Reggie Bush really had a bad game and Calvin, you know, went bonkers. It's been a trend all season, you know, and Reggie, but it really shocked me because I thought Reggie Bush was going to have a pretty good game against, you know, that Steelers defense because they're not great against the run, but don't get me wrong, this Steelers defense is a decent team defensively. They're ranked 10 in the league defensively, but I just thought Reggie was going to break out for a few, but he didn't. But you know, but well, there you have it. If you want to call and give us your thoughts on the Lions falling to the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Those who do will automatically be entered in our drawing to win two MSU home football tickets to their last home football game of the season against Minnesota on November 30th. When we return to Current Sports, we will talk about the MSU football team topping Nebraska to clinch at least a share of the Big Ten's Legends Division title. They are in controlling position now, folks. We want to hear your thoughts on it. Give us a call, 517-355-9527. Current Sports will be right back.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, we'll have an unusual music lesson with Keith Terry. He used to be a drummer. Now his instrument is his body. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now coming up at 2 p.m.
Hi, I'm Joe Lindstroth, producer of Current State.
And I'm Mark Bayshore, host of Current State.
We hope you'll join us for coffee and conversation on Tuesday, November 19th at 6 p.m. at Schuler Books Chapbook Cafe in the Eastwood Town Center.
Current State wants to hear what you think we should be covering here in mid-Michigan.
That's Coffee and Conversation with Current State, Tuesday, November 19th at 6 p.m. at Schuler Books Chapbook Cafe in the Eastwood Town Center.
We hope to see you there.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, let's dive into the Michigan State and Nebraska game. Of course, Michigan State, they, you know, at least win a share of the Big Ten's Legend Division title with a win over Nebraska. I believe we have a caller right now. Mike from Saginaw. How you doing, Mike? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, how you doing, Al?
Very good.
I just wanted to comment on, do Michigan State, before I talk about the Lions and the Steelers, do Michigan State, they don't play Penn State this year, right? I know they don't play Penn State at the end of the year. They usually play because that used to be a rivalry game or something, like the Land Grant Trophy or something.
Right.
This year they only got Northwestern and play Minnesota for their last game.
Exactly. I believe with changing up the Big Ten with the Legends and the Leaders Division, they changed up a lot of things. And no, Michigan State do not meet Penn State this season.
So it's like geographical rivalries now, huh? Mostly like next year. If it was this year coming up, it'd be Michigan State, and Ohio State in one conference, and Northwestern Minnesota would be in the other conference, right? Is geographical now?
I'm not sure if it's geographical. I'm not really sure the thought process that went into separating, you know, which teams are in the Legends and which teams are in the Leaders. Okay, do you any guys know?
Next year they start going to the straight up East and West.
Okay, gotcha.
With Rutgers and Maryland coming on board.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, Rutgers and Maryland are hopping on board. But yeah.
Okay. Now what I want to talk about the Lions. See, what I think the Lions is they still struggling. They trying to handle success. They just like they got the big league in the game, and all of a sudden they just. It's just like they can't handle success or something. I think that's a symptom of young teams. You know, when they finally they're getting their confidence, believing that they can win big close games and things of like that nature. And the Lions, to me, they're there, but they're not as there as they claim to be. Yeah, they just have to do some things. They have to do the little things well before they can really convince. Themselves that they can win games. What you think?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks a lot for your call, Mike. And, when it comes down to it, I think when you look at that at this weekend's game, it seemed as though they didn't come out the gates with the mindset that you need to when you're taking on a team, you know, any team in the NFL. And they seemed complacent to a degree. They did fight back. You know, they did fight back in the game. They had a great, that second quarter, Matthew Stafford and Calvin Johnson, you know, they showed up and showed out. But as that game went on, it just seems as though, you know, some decisions were made, some throws were made, that Lions secondary, that compiled, you know, all into one, you know, just was not a great recipe for the team. But, hey, thanks a lot for your call, Mike. All right, guys, well, let's dive into MSU and in Nebraska. Michigan State, they now... They've clinched at least a share of that Legends Division. Guys, I just want to get your overall thoughts, and we'll kind of hone in on some specific areas that I'm bringing up. Go ahead, Alex.
First of all, for our buddy Max, or I'm there. I hope you're still listening. Golf is not in session, but on Saturday, there was one golfer that was in session, and that was Michael Geiger. Okay, from the dog leg left, the first kick of the game.
He was great.
From the left hashes twice. He was just on. I mean, the guy for me has been one of the top stories of the year for Michigan State.
Was Sadler. We'll
get to him in a second now.
Sadler had 19 points, actually, I believe. He has 19 punts now, actually, inside of the 10-yard line. That leads the entire nation, man. He's something else. But go ahead, Alex.
We'll get to him in a second. But the reason I want to touch on Geiger is because with the whole Muma thing, with the whole Kevin Muma thing getting pulled, Geiger, the true freshman coming in, he was hyped up already. He was probably one of the top players in the class. So he came in. He's performed thus far. For me, that's the biggest thing for the game. Especially in a big game like Nebraska. At Nebraska. Tough, tough place to play. Second story of the game was just the traditional Connor Cook that we've always seen. From the first drive of the game, the overthrown wide open in the end zone, to the out route the next play, another overthrow. But then he comes back, he hones it all in later in the game, and he gets the job done.
Okay, you scared me for a minute.
And,
all right.
And for me, it just puts into a storyline for me that when he plays Ohio State, are we going to be able to afford him overthrowing the first drive of the game and not coming into his own until later in the game? I don't think so. And lastly, before I pass it over to Matt, I just want to talk about why they didn't review the punt when the player touched the ball when standing in the end zone. You remember the punt? He was in the end zone. You saw his foot on the end zone. That, to me, was the whole red flag from all the fans in the game. So if you're listening back home and you're watching that game and you're like, wow, how do they not review that? Well, that's why all this instant replay is still in question.
Matt?
Yeah, I actually didn't understand that either. I know Drummond kind of, you know, he handled it and didn't go in the end zone, and then Cox came up and touched the ball. And he's clearly for the end zone. And then the next play, Nebraska fumbles.
Can you
I don't know why it was
a huge play in the game. I don't know. I was saying the same
is
thing.
Is there a need
my head.
For review, like baseball, like with foul balls on end zone plays? I mean, we see it with fumbles.
I mean, they review. They review some of. I mean,
I've never seen a review on an end zone play.
I don't know. As far as my thoughts from the game, Connor Cook, you know, he might take a while to get going. The dude is money.
Yes, he is.
On third downs.
He is. I mean, they were great.
He is absolute, like, ice water in his veins.
Yep.
He will miss high on first down and out of bounds on second down. And on third down, they'll bring a blitz. He'll roll out and put it right on
the numbers. He handles pressure very well.
I don't get it.
Very
when
well.
When there's no rush and he has all day to set up and throw,
right?
He's you know hit or miss. But man, when the going gets tough, that guy makes
shows up.
Plays. He was huge. I love Jeremy Langford. He continues to be the guy to drive the final nail in the opposing team's coffin. It seems like every game he has a big run in the fourth quarter to put the other team away.
Right.
People are making a big deal about, oh, Nebraska outgained Michigan State. You know, they had more yards than them total, but I mean,
which was surprising. Let's be honest.
It's surprising, but I mean, look at the game. You know, Michigan State has what, three drives inside of 25 yards. You're not going to get 75 yard drives when you start out on the opponent 20. And Nebraska has a garbage time drive, 62 yards to score to pad the stats at the end. So it's like the numbers kind of lie there. Obviously, not all five turnovers were forced, but you got to give the defense a little more credit than they're getting. Yes, Nebraska gashed him up the middle. Amir Abdullah is
he's
good.
He's the best
runner in the conference,
yeah.
I think. I think he's better than Carlos Hyde. Still, you force five turnovers, you should get a little bit of a pat on the back. And you know, going with the special teams, thoughts earlier from Alex, can't forget Curtis Drummond forcing the fumble on Jordan Westerkamp.
That was
That's
a great
huge.
Tackle. That was a great, great tackle.
I mean, all around special teams, A+ for me this week. I think this is the first week they put every facet together: punt coverage, punt returns.
Right.
They made plays all over the field.
I totally agree. When you look at it, I think the special teams was the story of the game, because if you look at it, Nebraska's average starting position, fellas, was around the 20-yard line. Again, two of Nebraska's turnovers came within the 10 from that, you know, that goal line from the 10 to the 10-yard line. I mean, that's huge right there. Field position was so huge, and it wouldn't have been possible without that dominant special teams. And Mike Sadler, going to Sadler now. Again, he has 19 punts now, 10 yards or less. That leads the entire nation, and you saw him put on a great display this past weekend. That's unbelievable. The Spartan D, granted, it's definitely, when it comes down to it, let's be real here. That Spartan D giving up 392 total yards, I mean, that definitely was surprising, to everybody. You're talking about the best defense in the nation. This is number one defense in the nation. It's been shutting, teams, like Michigan for negative yardage. I mean, they've been great all year, and to see 392 total yards, that shocked everybody, I think. Going to your point, Matt, Jeremy Langford was great. 32 carries, 151 yards, 3 TDs. He has been unbelievable, really a spark plug when you need him to be a spark plug and get in there. The time of possession really stood out to me, too. If you look at it, MSU was 11 of 21 on third downs. That's a lot of third downs, fellas. And they had the ball for almost 39 minutes. That is unbelievable. So it shows you Nebraska was pretty efficient when they did have the ball to make it kind of a battle here. To a certain extent. So, going talking about Connor Cook right now. Connor Cook, I think Alex is getting better from week to week. He does a great job of not throwing any interceptions. He takes the care of the ball very, very well. He was 15 for 31 this past weekend, 493 yards. Connor Cook to me seems as though he gets better as the game goes on, as we just alluded to. and he seems more comfortable as the game goes on, and he seems to be getting more accurate as the game goes on. Because we saw him make some throws that were quite impressive as that game went on.
Oh, yeah, and to even go off what Matt was saying, how he just stood in the pocket, he took the
heat. He looked so comfortable.
Yeah, for the listeners who missed it, I believe they were at the 30, 40-yard line. It was a third, I think it was a third in.
Third and 13.
Third and 13.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They had two straight losses of yards. Connor, they brought the all-out blitz, running from left to right. And then you have Gregory coming right at you. Connor Cook doesn't even throw off his back. Like, he stands right there with both ends coming at him. The big guy that looks like a mini Sue, the freshman, coming at him too. And makes a perfect, perfect throw to Mumphrey.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. And would he do that in the first? Probably not. But
he's, you know, you also got to realize he's a sophomore. You
know what I mean? But what I'm saying is, as the game goes on, he can do that. So, going off exactly what you were saying, would he be able to make that in the first? No way. But as the game goes on, that's his key to success. Now,
and I think that'll come, though. I think as he gets more experience behind center, I think you'll start to see a more consistent Connor Cook throughout the entire game and not play by play by play.
Oh, yeah, maybe next
that
year.
That comes. He's a young quarterback.
But for the Legends Division title, for the Big Ten Championship title?
That's why you play the game, baby.
They can't afford that, is what I'm saying, Al. You can't afford to have a quarter of inaccuracy and then expect to win a game. You have to be, when you're playing Ohio State and Carlos Hyde in the offense, your offense has to be firing at all cylinders.
And you got
to
look at that game, though. I mean, we'll see how that offense, that Ohio State offense, matches up against this Michigan State defense, which is the best in the nation. That could buy Connor Cook some time. You never know throughout that game to get better as the game goes on. There's so many scenarios that we can throw out there, but I don't think that'll be the end-all to be-all, you know, in that Michigan State-Ohio State game. But
one other thing, we're giving Connor Cook tons of credit, but the credit also goes to the receivers.
Yeah,
they are making plays. Tony Lippett is a completely different player than he was last season.
Yeah.
Benny Fowler's come a long way. Keith Mumphrey, he seems to come in just to get one grab, but it's a long touchdown.
Right.
You know, McGarrett Kings makes plays. They have guys who are stepping up and making plays. And, you know, some of the catches that we saw Saturday would have never, like, I couldn't even imagine them
at
the Western Michigan game.
Right.
I mean, there was no way you were going to tell me that they would make big-time plays on third down, tough catches, and they just kept doing it all game long. It was great to see. It's great to see the maturation and the growth that the wide receiver core has made this season. It's night and day.
Head over heels. It's a great point, man, because I wouldn't have never fathomed this, you know, this MSU receiving core to have the type of game that they had this past Saturday. It looked great. I mean, they were making plays. There were a lot of, you know, plays being made on both ends for this Spartan team offensively in many facets. So, but yeah, we'll see as time goes on. Now they're kind of sitting in a good spot now where, you know, they can clinch it, you know, with a few scenarios this Saturday, and you know, now I guess they can relax a little bit knowing that, you know, they'll at least get a share of it. So we'll see as time goes on. Now, great win for them though, and they now move on next week, and I think they're feeling pretty confident and comfortable. And I believe we have some, you know, you get to hear from here's Coach D'Antonio. After that win,
you know, I think we won on offense today. We won on defense with the turnovers, but we really won on offense with our execution. We won on special teams with some big plays. The kicks, I thought Kevin Muma was very good. Our kickoff coverage was extremely good. You know, our punting was extremely good. We downed a couple, I think three maybe inside the 10, maybe three, maybe four. So he continues to lead the nation in that category, which if you got to go 95 yards or 90-plus yards, that's tough. That's tough to do. So Satter continues to be a weapon and get a big punt return from McGarrett Kings. Got the fake. So we won that phase of it. I thought defensively we played well with five turnovers. You certainly can say that you win that end of it. Things. It's very difficult to win a game if you're minus two, let alone to be minus five. I mean, it's almost impossible.
Yeah, so that was head coach Mark D'Antonio after that win. I believe he got doused in green Gatorade and said it never tastes so good.
And that's the thing, guys, is – when D'Antonio called the Charlie Brown, you viewed him on the sidelines. He was trying to keep straight face.
He played it so well. The poker face. I think he just did a little. It was great. It was great, man. D'Antonio has a great poker face, I tell you. But that's a great, great nickname.
Oh, it is. And Lucy was the mirror play.
Right.
If he went left.
Right.
He was supposed to go right.
Right, right.
The alignment wasn't what they thought it was going to be, and he didn't audible out. He just kept it and ran it straight up the gut.
Yeah,
way to exactly. go, Mike Sadler.
That's
way
good
to
stuff.
Be. But
that's smart. That's hands-up stuff right
You
there.
Could almost tell something was up, though. I thought, wow, here comes a fake, and everybody in the room with me thought I was an idiot, and then they faked it and got it, and I felt like a genius.
Really?
But you could see because, you know, he said, you know, we'll take the three, and it looked like guys on the sideline didn't know exactly what they were supposed to do, and then he had to do it again. He was like, come on, let's go, let's
okay,
do
so that hesitation of him doing it again.
I think everyone was like, are you sure, coach? And he, you know, he made the call, and he seems to have a knack for it.
He does,
other
man.
Than the, you know, the R.J. Shelton pass at Notre Dame.
Yeah,
his trick plays are.
I love
them.
I love the nickname. They have great nicknames on those trick plays too. Ugh. All right, and here's Max Bullen kind of cooked after that game as well.
We play great teams week in and week out, but man, I'm sure they feel the same way. But we feel like we should win the games, and when you have that attitude and you believe it, and guys are you know playing with each other and playing with that attitude, then you're going to do good things, and you're going to come out on top of games like this. You're going to get the turnovers that he talked about that you don't always get. You know, those are the kind of things that happen to teams that are going to do something special.
Anytime as a quarterback you have receivers making plays like that, you know, especially on third down. I thought we did a really good job on third down today. You know, we remained balanced, you know, running the ball, passing the ball. But anytime a quarterback can have the receivers make those kind of plays, it always helps.
Yeah, so that's Max Bulla and Connor Cook on that win over Nebraska this past Saturday. Well, let's take another quick break. Come right back at you. When we do, we will update you on what took place this weekend in the world of high school football. What teams live to fight another day and take one more step to playing on the gridiron at Ford Field. I'll let you know in just a second. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports will be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, Israel's internal and external challenges. We talk with Israeli journalist Ari Shavit about the ongoing peace negotiations with Palestinians, divides between secular and ultra-Orthodox Jews, and his own experiences in the Israeli military. Shavit's new book is My Promised Land. Join us.
That's Fresh Air, coming up at 3 o'clock. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, really quickly, it was a crazy, crazy weekend in the world of high school football. Of course, teams trying to it's really getting tight now. Just one more win away for teams that are trying to make it to Ford Field to compete for a state championship. As far as our local teams go, here's how everything played out. Pawama Westphalia, they ended their football season with a record of 10-2 after falling to Harbor Beach 31-14 in the Division 7 regionals on Saturday. Ryan Wolozowski and William Fandle, they scored touchdowns for PW, which nearly overturned a 17-0 deficit and came to within 3 points early in the fourth quarter. But Harbor Beach scored twice, including a late interception return for a touchdown to deny PW what would have been its third consecutive regional title. And interesting moment of this one after the game. Ithaca coach Terry Hesbrook, when he accepted the Division VI regional championship trophy after his team beat New Guinea on Saturday, he turned to the Miners players and coaches kneeling about 20 yards away. Hesbrook told New Guinea that their team was the toughest the Yellow Jackets had played in a long time. It's been a long time since Ithaca has lost two folks. The Yellow Jackets are 12-0, won their 54th game in a row. Unbelievable, with a 62-34 win, but they trailed by two scores in the first quarter and were behind 28-20, yes, early in the second. Ithaca will play Montrose next Saturday in a Division VI semi at an undetermined site, so we don't know where that will be just yet. Division III football regional at DeWitt on Friday night, top-ranked and undefeated Panthers, they rousted upstart Eden Rapids 49-0. 49-0 in that one. DeWitt had
has double-digit wins for the 10th time in the past 13 years. Olivet, they fell to Grand Rapids West Catholic 35-14 in an MHSAA Division 5 Regional Championship matchup. Olivet, tri-champs of the KVA with Penfield and Schoolcraft, they ended its campaign with a 10-2 record. West Catholic, state runner-up in 2012, advanced to the semifinal round where it will take one Livonia Clarenceville. And this is the game Current Sports was at, folks. Sexton, Lansing Sexton, yes. Avante Bell, he lost a fumble in the end zone and saw Saginaw Swan Valley take its first lead on the next play in the fourth quarter on Friday night with an 80-yard run back. Unbelievable, folks. But the Sexton Jr. atoned for the mistake in a big way later in the fourth to keep the Big Red season alive. Sexton reclaimed the lead with a clutch drive, then Avante had an interception with a minute remaining, securing the Big Reds 26-21 win and a Division IV regional championship game. Emotions were definitely flowing after that one, folks. Many who doubted Sexton after that huge run back by Saginaw Swan Valley to take the lead. Here is head coach Dan Bogan after the game. First of all, Dan, clear emotion for you right now. Man. Just first of all, what's going through your head right now? Talk about this moment, this feeling.
Just history, being here before, and not getting the job done.
You had said that you wanted to walk out of this game 12-0. You were 11-0 going in, and now you are 12-0. Talk about that.
Well, we wanted to win it. Our whole goal was to win this thing and definitely win our games at home all year. And the kids, they played their hearts out. Both, and I take my hat off to Swan Valley. That's a heck of a football team, and that Grace kid is a special player. I'm just so proud of our kids, never giving up, and staying in the fight. And I just can't say enough about what type of championship effort they played with tonight against a really good football team.
Coach, you got a little bit of everything from Avante Bell tonight.
Yes, we did. Yeah, Avante. He knew he had to carry the load by himself with Javon Ray being out and, play defense, special teams, carry the ball 20-something times, and he did a great job. You know, he had two fumbles, but they were all great effort behind the fumbles. And, I'm just really proud of him. A huge huge interception when they were driving on that last drive by Avante after he had fumbled. So says a lot about him. And I said to him after, I said, calm down. I said, make up for it now. So, and he did. So I'm just really proud the way he responded after that fumble.
What's the word on Ray at this point?
We expect to have him out here next week. You know, they were concerned, wanted to have him sit out another week. And, they said he should be ready for next week. So.
Did the effort that you saw tonight from your players David.
Definitely. It was, like I said, this was championship effort. Last year, Saginaw Swan Valley was in the semis, and this year we're replacing them, and we believe we can get to fourth field, and we believe we can win it.
Dan, I got to ask you, late in that game when you guys went down that 80-yard return for them, what did you tell your team to keep them poised and focused?
And that's exactly what I told them. I said, calm down. We've been here before. I said, now what we have to do is we got to respond. And they did.
So there was no panic on their face?
No. I saw a little bit, but everybody got together and they started getting after each other and boosting each other up. And I think after our first couple catches, we knew that we were moving the ball pretty well and everybody's confidence was up. And we just executed greatly on that last drive.
How about Max play on that drive?
The last play was...
No, Max play.
Malik. Malik just stayed in there in the pocket, which was phenomenal by him. He took some hits and threw the ball excellently that last drive. He really did.
How long are you going to relish in this moment?
Probably to tonight, and we'll get back to work tomorrow. That's it.
Only celebrated, not that much afterwards. Right back to work, fellas. All right. Well, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to all of you out there for tuning in. You can listen to Current Sports with me, Al Martin on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic day. And if you want to sign up to be a part of the Current Sports TV audience this Wednesday as I sit down with T.J. Duckett, yes, former MSU and NFL running back, go to WKAR.org to sign up Wednesday night at 6:30 p.m. will be the time of that taping. As always, take care, have a fantastic day, and be easy, people.